For the past 10-plus years, Jessica Houghton Wilson has explored the 378 pages of typed and handwritten material of Flannery O'Connor's final unfinished novel, Why Do the Heathen Rage? Transcribing pages, organizing them into scenes, and compiling everything to provide a glimpse into what O'Connor might have planned to publish. The new book introduces O'Connor's novel to the public for the first time. Houghton Wilson unveils scenes that are both funny and thought-provoking, ultimately revealing that we have much to learn from what O'Connor left behind. The unfinished novel is in the new form, Flannery O'Connor's Why Do the Heathen Rage, a behind-the-scenes look at a work in progress, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Jessica Houghton Wilson to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on.
So nice to have you. So this is a work that O'Connor left behind when she died in 1964 at the age of 39 years old. This was a work that most scholars said could never be published. When did you enter into the equation?
Well, I first saw the material in 2010, and at first I treated it like other scholars. I wrote some stuff on it. I kind of explained what I thought Flannery was doing and what she was up to. And I gave a presentation actually on that material at the University of Chicago at a conference on Flannery O'Connor. And when I did, Louise Florencourt, Flannery's cousin, was in the audience. Billy Sessions was in the audience listening to that presentation. And Billy had the bright idea to, we should publish this, even though it's not finished. Let's get it out into the world. Would you be willing to do that? So we started a conversation at that point and tried to do something different than other scholars had done. And so to what Flannery was doing when she died and what she had left to give.
So when you say do something different, what had been done and what was kind of your mantra moving forward over the 10 years that you were working with the material?
So there had only been three scholars who had looked at the material and published articles on it, and the articles were along the lines of Flannery was trying something new. She was trying to go a different direction than she had in her previous fiction, and she didn't accomplish it, and she died. And so instead, what I wanted to show was, well, she died because she was only 2 or 3 years into the work. It's not that she didn't accomplish it because she couldn't ultimately, but at the time she couldn't. And I think getting to see where she was headed, my mantra became, look at how much she was growing. Look at how much she could have given had she lived longer. Look at the directions that her fiction was taking, the way that her genius was taking off. And it gave me a lot of hope as a writer myself, just thinking how much I hope I grow over time and how much I hope I develop. And getting to see that in Flannery, I thought it was a really hopeful thing to publish and show other people.
How much did you learn about this work from looking at the process and the work that she had done with editors and so forth in her past work?
Flannery was someone who was a meticulous revisionist. She was always revising, focusing on each word. Diction was very important to her. Syntax was important to her. She's one of those writers that doesn't just love the plot and the characters. She just loves the minutiae too. She loves every piece of her stories. And you can look at letters to other editors when she was publishing short stories with how much attention she paid to all those details. That's one of the things we don't get to have, because to get into the nitty-gritty with her work, we would have been replacing her and trying to do something that we can only imagine what the genius would have done with her own material. But at the same time, I was able to learn from her process about character development, how much she looked into her character. She would write about their childhood. She would write about their parents. She would write all of these stories to kind of flesh them out and get to know them. There was a certain generosity that she had towards her characters that I had assumed before, but was able to learn more fully as I read the characters and their own development in the short scenes that we have.
When you consider those short scenes, and what did you come away with saying when I ask you a very simple question, well, what is it about? That yeah. is an easy question to answer, or no?
Well, it's what could it have been about? Because what we have is a setup. We have a great premise of a novel. And the premise of the novel is that you have one of these white intellectual Southern types that is very common in Flannery's fiction, but he's doing something different. One, he converts at the beginning of the novel, whereas in Flannery's fiction, a lot of the stories are about the Hound of Heaven, kind of God chasing after characters. And usually the characters either accept or reject this moment of grace that is offered to them at the end of a story. So we have something different even in Flannery writing that moment of grace at the beginning of a story for this character, and his name is Walter. And the other thing that's different about him is that he is writing letters to people in the mail, trying on these various personas. It feels very 21st century, the way people would kind of come up with their own social media personas and go out into the world and put on different masks and faces and figure out who they are and test other people's responses to them. So this character, Walter, is doing that, and he starts a communication with a woman named Una Gibbs, who is a New York civil rights activist. She has broken through the ceiling of religion, has become very spiritual, and he thinks he's going to test her own openness to people by pretending to be Black through the mail. And by doing so, he thinks she doesn't actually love people as much as she says she does. And that's kind of the opening of the novel. She's going to come down and show him that she loves him no matter what the color of his skin. And he's determined that she won't. And I think that kind of encounter was a way that Flannery was going to show that people could love each other and that we were all made in God's image. I think she was going towards this different vision than we've seen in the past writing for her.
You make the case that, and you touched on this a moment ago, that she did not feel she could tell this story well at that particular time in her life.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I mean, we have to kind of put ourselves a little bit backwards in history. She's in a segregated world in the 60s, in the South, in a home that doesn't belong to her. She's in her mother's home because she herself is sick and ailing. She's not among friends and equals, you know, learning new things and meeting new people the way she was for a brief time of her life when she lived in New York. And she also attended Yaddo, which is an artist colony up there. So she's had these experiences that kind of opened her up, but the world that she was in was very closed. And that made it difficult to write the kind of novel I think that she wanted to write, is living in that world and experiencing things the way that she did with this limited perspective. I mean, she dies, I point this out in the book, she dies a month after LBJ writes the Civil Rights Act. So Flannery O'Connor was an integrationist by principle, is what she said, but by practice, her world was not a world that was integrated.
Upon her death, was there any other work? I mean, was this the sole project she was working on, or were there other things that this had stalled prior to her passing?
She does refer to this work itself. She says that she was like a squirrel on a treadmill. And it was the same phrase she had used in other novels, so it wasn't just this one. But oftentimes when she stalled, she would mine the material she was going through to create short stories, because those were much more manageable to publish in a short amount of time. And so some of the short stories that she was able to put out while she was working on this novel that were touching on similar themes, Revelation is the key one. So Revelation she puts out at the very end of her life. It's the last short story she writes fully at the end, as well as Parker's Back, she's writing at the end. So some of these stories, when you look at her collection, the last stories that she wrote, the last two or three, were at the same time that she was working on this novel.
It is, I think, important. I'm asking you, is it important to remember the fact that she dies of lupus and complications from of lupus following a surgery for a fibroid, but there is the diagnosis that comes in the early 50s. So she is ailing as she is writing the two novels and the short stories, and that certainly plays a part of her entire body of work, does it not?
I think so. Flannery was, when reporters would ask her, you know, how does your sickness affect the way that you write? And she would say, well, it doesn't, because I use my head and not my feet to craft short stories. At the same time, I think her experience of suffering was stronger than those of us who have not gone through that kind of daily sickness and daily toil. So she had to be determined to write her stories. She had to be able to give those gifts because it hurt her. She said that she would write for 3 hours and recover the rest of the day. So it was something where she was willing to suffer to write the fiction. In a sense, she was always kind of putting aside her own convenience and her own health to make sure she wrote these works.
About 10 years ago, there was a prayer journal of hers that was published by the University of Iowa. Does that include anything that is relevant to the writing of this particular novel?
Even though they were about 20 years apart, I think so. Oftentimes when I give a presentation on Flannery and talk about her posthumous work, that's one of the works I refer to because she writes this journal at the very beginning where she says, you know, dear God, I do not love you the way I ought. You are the slim crescent of the moon that I see, and it's perhaps all that one like I can or should see, but I don't want to go so big that I don't see you. So please help me dig down deep underneath things to where you are. That to me is how we can understand O'Connor, especially in these last works. She is trying to dig down beneath the surface of contemporary headlines, of propaganda, of marketers. I mean, she mentions all these things in her letter. She's digging down beneath the things that are on the surface of our world to find where God is and where he is at work and try to uncover him and bring him to the surface in her fiction.
I don't mean to throw a bomb at you here. I'm just curious as to your feelings. But as I was reading this, I thought to myself, oh, goodness, I wish this is what they did with Harper Lee's final, the unpublished work that they found, as opposed to how it was presented to the world. It just tells me we have to be very careful, right, of how we present unpublished work when someone has passed.
Yes, I agree. You know, I reviewed that years ago when Ghost of the Watchman came out. Similarly, I wanted to hear from Harper Lee herself, which of course was not possible at the time. And I wanted to hear from other people and make this more of a conversation rather than just put it out into the world. So when I was publishing Flannery's work, I intended on being a conversation. So I was sending drafts to people. I had an artist who also, he responded to the work, not only in an afterword, but he's also responding with his art. So his art is talking to the work. So I was hoping to make it a more open conversation piece. Like, here are the scenes that she left behind. Let's talk about them. Let's figure out what she was doing. Let's have different opinions on this. Let's talk about our own process and how we pick up from what O'Connor left behind and the legacy that she left us. And how are we now writers in our own time and place? And we can learn some lessons from what she did well.
So with that said, for Flannery O'Connor scholars, yourself included, what does this new information and what does your volume add to that equation?
I think one of the things that people have really closed off when they consider Flannery is they talk about her as though she's a complete product. They talk about her work like it's a closed box and that this was all she was ever capable of and this is all she ever accomplished. And especially when it comes to things like race, they sometimes forget that she... in 1964, the world was changing. I think she would have been part of the change. I do believe that like Walker Percy or Dorothy Day, some of her contemporaries, Caroline Gordon, some people that had close relationships with O'Connor, and we got to see them live until they were much older and them change over time and write different kinds of stories and fiction, that we should see Flannery in the same way, that if she would have lived past 39, ideas that she was handling in this fiction show us that she was developing. She was not a closed box. She was not a finished product. She was an in-process writer, as we all are. And maybe we'll have more generosity and charity towards how we read her if we get to see her in light of how she was growing, not how she was stopped and static according to death, which took her too soon.
When you say closed box, are you referring to, or it seems that perhaps, that the stereotype is that she is an Irish Catholic Southern writer?
Yeah, I'm definitely thinking that. I'm also thinking sometimes people say that Flannery's a little bit formulaic. So
Yeah.
they'll look back at her stories and they'll say things like, oh, an overbearing mom and a white Southern intellectual at home in the South, like you said, a Southern writer, and someone's going to get hurt and then someone's going to come to Jesus. You know, like there's these different stipulations that we've come up with her work. And we see the formulaic and we don't see, oh, but look at how different some of these later works were, especially Why Did the Heathen Rage, where God was going to talk to Walter in a still, small voice. And it was going to be an intellectual journey that began at the beginning. And I think one of the other things that we see in this unfinished novel is that she could have been starting to write a love relationship, which she had not really done. She does a little bit with Parker's Back, but I think even that story she was writing at the same time as this novel, I think she was trying to write those different kinds of relationships, even though she didn't have them in her own experience. And we get to see her growing in that way as well.
When you finish a project like this, do you go looking for other work like it? Or do you say, okay, I'm going to do something completely different now?
Oh, I'm doing something completely different. So one of the things that's probably difficult for people to remember, it looks like I've produced 2 books a year for the last 3 years. And the reality is that I was working on Flannery O'Connor since 2010. And I finished this project in its current form in 2021, maybe. So now it's been a few years. We're finally getting to see the light of day. That just happens with publication. But I'm definitely working on new things.
Well, the name of the new book is Flannery O'Connor's Why Do the Heathen Rage? A behind-the-scenes look at a work in progress by Jessica Houghton Wilson. The unfinished novel in print for the first time. Jessica, thank you so much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you. I can't wait to hear how people love the book.
Be well. Can't wait either. Thank you so much. Again, the name of the new book is Flannery O'Connor's Why Do the Heathen Rage? A behind-the-scenes look at a work in progress by Jessica Houghton Wilson. The book is published by Brazos Press. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.